Mystery Crate has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to another episode of the Mystery Crate, the only podcast I think that's in existence, which you have no idea what you're getting before you actually listen to. Yay.
Scary mystery.
What were you doing? Dead panning?
Yeah.
That was like a jolly scary.
It's the only podcast in which it's a total mystery as to what you're going to listen to until you actually listen to it, or you wait a couple of days and we tell you on our social media platform. Oh, and it's all brought to you by the fine folks at ZipRecruiter. We're going to jump right into it because we got a very exciting show, and I'll tell you exactly what's on it after I tell you. But what the hell happened over there, Roy? Did your
my headset just fell?
How?
I don't know.
Did your ears fall off?
It was a mystery.
There's a ghost in here.
What if you had your own personal recruiter help you find a better job? Now, ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you'll like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone who is just like you. And if an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know. So if you're interested in that job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is a number one rated job search app. And based on a third party survey, And based on a third party survey, 7 out of 10 people who found a new job on ZipRecruiter increased their salaries. Look at that. According to that survey, you can make some more money by using the ZipRecruiter job search app. So, Mystery Crate listeners, you know what? I'm leaning on the laugh. ZipRecruiter listeners.
Look at that scary guy out the window. Sorry. He looks like he didn't kill somebody.
You get so thrown off by observations that only you can notice.
Well, because I'm doing the scary voice and then I see a windows open and there's a guy just leering out and it's like he's in the shadows, but he's kind of pale and he kind of looks like a scary person that would be, you know, responsible for bad thing. Look, he disappeared.
ZipRecruiter listeners, go and download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Don't wait. The sooner you can download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. So, on this episode of Mystery Crate, we're going to give you some Dan. We're going to give you some Dan, because we can get contributions from Stugatz, we can get contributions from Dan, we can get contributions from the Shipping Container, or any of the associated voices that are in our universe. Remember, Amin did a May the 4th Be With You episode of the Mystery Crate. We like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. So, this week on Mystery Crate...
Wilson looks so annoyed with his voice. I don't even get it.
You know what? You'll get contributions from everybody on this show.
Except Allison.
Except for Allison. Yeah. Allison, can you come to the microphone real quick?
The good thing that you now know is that she's in the room when we do these things. She's
Allison,
just actively
Allison,
not participating.
Allison.
How about just do a scary laugh?
Just
a scary laugh.
Yeah,
you want me to, like an example? Like that.
Allison,
do that.
Allison, come on. The microphone's on.
This is not my wheelhouse.
Oh.
What's your wheelhouse? You want to talk about The Hills?
We can talk about anything you want.
She's been texting me about The Hills nonstop. Did you know Misha Barton's in The Hills?
Can we talk about The Hills?
That's not what I said.
Allison, let's talk about The Hills. Please.
What
I am begging you. Say it into the mic, whatever you're saying. Please. Just come to the microphone. Yes. Allison.
Yeah, Allison,
yes.
Everybody.
Wow.
Allison officially making her Mystery Crate debut. Here is Allison Turner.
No, she's having
the best
thoughts.
Producer in the business, a mentor of mine. I would not be producing this show were not for Allison giving a wet behind the ears 19-year-old Mike Ryan his first internship in radio. Allison is the best. She continues to be the best. And here she is making her Mystery Crate debut.
Allison
Turner. I was 19 years old. What, did I lie on my resume?
No, that just seems awfully young.
Why do your headphones have tape on them? Like, they came a little while ago and they brought us tape.
Remember the question about repairing or just buying?
Yeah, but we have headphones.
I know, but these are still working.
Yeah, Allison gave me, for those that don't know, Allison gave me my first internship with 790 The Ticket when I was 19 years old. And we bonded over the game show Big Brother, which is a reality show. Like, we would talk in the halls about, like, that week's episode of Big Brother. I was a big Dr. Will guy.
You know what's weird is that
you don't remember
I didn't
that at
watch
all.
Big Brother then.
So, what?
Yeah, no.
You
I don't
must
think
have.
We bonded over this.
Because no, we absolutely.
No, we didn't. I started watching in season 8 or 9.
Not true.
It is
not true.
Erroneous. I didn't watch it from the
beginning.
I think Mike knows when you started watching Big Brother.
We had conversations about Big Brother.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because you, Hawk, and I would all watch Big Brother, and then we would talk about it. Yeah. No?
I think it was someone else.
No, it was absolutely Allison Turner.
I don't think it was me because I didn't watch
Allison, you were the only woman in that building. Trust me, it was you.
No, Sheila was there.
Sheila. Sheila. Just thinking back to Sheila.
Are we done now?
No, we're not done.
Oh.
We're going to talk about what you want
to
talk about.
You have to do the laugh. Do the laugh.
I'm not doing that laugh.
You need to channel your inner, like, haunted mansion from Disney World.
I don't need to channel anything.
Are we still on for the Disney World Allison trip,
no,
November
we're not.
16th?
We're not.
November 16th, you're going
Mark
to
your calendars. Yeah. Allison has committed to going to Disney World November 16th.
You've
we're not
gonna
say
to
which park
there.
She will be
there.
At, but she'll be there.
Why are you texting Billy about the Hills? You watch The Hills?
I didn't know. I did watch The Hills. I didn't know that Misha Barton was on the show years ago because I saw her.
She wasn't.
She's promoting it.
Misha Barton, the actress?
Yes.
From The OC and The Sixth Sense?
Yeah. She's on the
That's a reality
of the,
show.
I know.
Yeah, so, she's in The Sixth Sense.
She's a girl that, spoiler alert, she's the ghoul that barfs.
Ha 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 ha.
So she's on the reboot or the Hills next year, whatever they're calling it.
How's she
I don't
doing?
Know what they're call- I don't know.
Because I was.
She just got a new show. The Hills.
Because last I saw Misha Barton, which was admittedly years ago, Misha Barton was reputed to be like a socialite and a party animal, and she was wearing it at the time that I saw her, and I remember being very concerned for Misha Barton. Mm. How's she doing?
The picture I'm seeing, she's wearing a red shirt.
She seems to be okay. Like Billy said, she has a new show, yeah. The Hills. What is it called?
So The Hills is like a scripted reality show, right?
I think so.
Where they inject a lot of fake drama into real people's lives.
Fake drama?
Yes, I guess.
Yeah,
did you watch The Hills? No.
I did not watch The Hills.
Oh.
But I'm familiar with all the people that came from it. Kristen, Spencer, Heidi, who's a really famous one? Lauren Conrad, LC. Everyone called her. Brody.
Kristen Cavallari.
I said Kristen.
Oh,
I let
you
off
did?
With Kristen.
Whitney.
Kristen to me is top dog. So
Kristen
you
was more
the
Kristen was more Laguna Beach than The Hills. Though she came at the end of The Hills, but Laguna Beach was her.
So Laguna Beach was a spinoff of The Hills.
No, the other way.
The other way.
Yeah, they started on Laguna Beach and then they left and did The Hills, and then I think Kristen got Laguna Beach right when Lauren started doing The Hills.
I think she was like Lauren because was she dating?
They were like nemesis because they were dating Steven. Right? Was
right,
Steven
but
the guy?
Brody also come into the picture?
I don't know when Brody came. I think Brody was strictly a Hills thing, not necessarily Laguna Beach. I'm not sure. But then when LC left, then Kristen was like the star of The Hills, and I wasn't watching at that point.
Holy
you
shit.
Watched,
this is the widest conversation I've ever had.
Whoa.
You watched Brody's show.
Yeah, there wasn't
Spencer, right?
There wasn't a black cast member in The Hills or Laguna Beach.
No kidding.
Blast member.
Okay.
You know, we had taken a few days off from that bit, and I was enjoying it. I was enjoying it, Chris. So The Hills is back. You're not slinking away just
the
yet.
Hills
the,
Hill, back.
The Hills is back.
Back,
but it's not with LC?
New Beginnings.
LC is not on the New Beginnings. The Hills, New Beginnings.
But Misha Barton's
Misha
on it.
Misha Barton's on it, apparently.
Yeah, she's on. I wonder if, like, because at the time, the OC was a show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you okay? You're getting choked up just thinking about it.
He's overwhelmed. He loves Justin Bobby, so which is not surprising. Do you know Justin Bobby?
From
the Hills? I don't.
What does that mean?
I mean, it's not surprising that Justin Bobby's your favorite character.
I mean, so at the time, the OC was a thing, right? Mm-hmm. And like, Misha Barton was like a big star.
Oh, dude, the
and
best.
And The Hills was like an MTV version of the OC, right? But now like she's come over and she's doing The Hills, so it has to be weird for her, right? Because she was probably out. Like, if they were to go out, like the two casts were to go out somewhere, I would imagine that the OC cast could get in anywhere, and the Hills cast was kind of like second fiddle to the OC cast, right?
Did you watch? Oh my God.
What?
Billy, did everyone say that he was, you were like Adam Brody? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
What was his character's name on the show?
You do remind me of Adam Brody.
I didn't watch
the OC.
You did watch
No,
the
I
OC.
Didn't.
We
really
talked
didn't.
About this.
No, like in my high school, it was a thing where like people were watching the OC and I tried to give it a try, but it was like the eighth or ninth episode and I was like, I can't.
But did people say you were like
much.
That guy?
No, I know who you're talking about.
Yes, Seth Cohen. That's you. Yeah. Seth Cohen.
Okay.
You know who also, I'm going to give you guys a little secret. Okay. Can I tell them who I think you remind me of, the female version of somebody?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, can I guess? She's got a movie coming out this weekend.
She does.
Aubrey Plaza.
Do you see it?
What movie does she have coming
Child's
out?
Play.
Child's Play.
She plays
that?
The mom.
It's like a horror show.
She plays the mom, right?
She's the mom in a scary movie?
Yeah, Chucky. They rebooted Chucky, Child's Play.
Do you see it?
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Aubrey Plaza.
He is Aubrey Plaza.
He is.
She is Billy.
Dan said no to her, right?
Yeah, I want her to be on the show just so we can...
Well, you know what? With the Mystery Crate, you have a much wider net that you could cast when it comes to guests. And I would love to have Billy interview Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, it would
Let's
be
make
so
it
uncomfortable.
Be so
no, because
awkward.
She goes out of her way to make interviews uncomfortable, it seems. And, like, I'm not good at that.
Well,
by
I'm
the
just
way,
saying. Let's spread some love.
You've been asking me who Brandon is from The Hills, like, 1,000 times. Who's Brandon? Who's Brandon? It's some guy named Brandon Thomas Lee. I don't know who he is, but I'm
you
on the
said,
cast
you
page.
You said it was Brody's brother.
No, Brody has a brother named Brandon, I think, but this is not his brother, because his name is Brandon Thomas Lee, not Brandon James.
Yeah, maybe, Brody does
you know
have
what?
A brother.
Maybe
that...
that's Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee's kid.
Whoa.
Click really?
On the yeah, click on it.
Click
There's
on
no
it.
No bio. It just says his name
well,
and it takes
Google
us to his
Brandon,
Instagram.
I bet you that's who that
Brandon
is.
Lee? Brandon Lee was actually Bruce Lee's son, and Brandon Lee died tragically on the set of The Crow.
So Brandon Lee's Instagram description is 100% don't care about anything besides my dog, which is not helpful in this instance.
Pamela Anderson is on his Instagram.
Yeah.
Wait, Google to see who his parents are.
Well, I mean, there's
I
a
mean,
picture of a
it seems
has
pretty obvious at this point.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's not Bruce Lee.
So that now we know the rest of the cast. Are you going to be watching The Hills?
When does it come out?
I'll watch it communally if you guys are into it.
I'm not gonna,
the way that we connected over Big Brother so many years ago, even though allegedly you said...
I didn't watch it then.
Allison, I will call Hawk right now. We used to watch Big Brother.
He's doing You can call him.
Right yeah, call him. There's half an hour before the show starts.
I'll find out if something's still a banger or not, and then we'll ask
call
him.
Call him. I know his number.
Big
Is calling. That weird?
Are you?
Call
you're
him.
Still watching Big Brother, right, Billy?
I don't know. I can't. I don't really commit. By the way, Stephanie Pratt, Spencer's sister, is on. So when the royal wedding was happening, who are the people who got married? Harry and Meghan. When they got married, when we were going to do that, well, not we. When I did that like watch thing, that was like a huge disaster of me watching the royal wedding. The night before, I watched like 3 or 4 specials on the royal wedding just to be like informed because I had an expert that was going to do it with me and then she bailed at the last minute, like literally the night before bailed on me. So I'm like, crap, now I need to go through and like educate myself. So I was watching this special on the royal wedding and Stephanie Pratt was in the special. Like they were interviewing her and her description was like royal socialite or something like that. She lived in London for a little bit, I think, and was a socialite in London. So they were asking her about the royal wedding.
Are you going to call Hawk?
No, I decided against it.
Why? Oh.
I mean,
you're wrong on this.
No, it's
you're
just...
You're definitely wrong on this.
I just
I know
wanted
when I
to do
the show.
Something else, which was not call him.
Oh.
Yeah. Jeez, we get Allison on, and now she doesn't shut up.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And now she walks away.
Where are you
that's
going?
How I knew exactly how to get her away.
Where are you going?
Yeah. Oh, no, Allison, please,
you
no,
You have to, like,
back.
Tease the next thing. Yeah.
All right. So we talked to Danny Goldberg. Well, we didn't. Dan did. This is a Dan interview. And do you guys like Nirvana? Of course you do. Of course you do. Roy, you like Nirvana?
Yes.
One of the great bands of our time. Kurt Cobain, obviously the front man for the iconic 3-piece that became a 4-piece. I'm not going to get the fine with Pat Smear. Anyways, this is a fascinating interview with Danny Goldberg that Dan does. Danny Goldberg, you might not know, worked very closely with Nirvana and Kurt Cobain, and he wrote the book Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain. It's an interesting look at one of music's most influential bands. It is Dan interviewing Danny Goldberg. So Dan interviews, that's all good, and you love Dan, and you want him on the Mystery Crate. So here he is interviewing Danny Goldberg about Nirvana. Enjoy. Enjoy.
This guy has worked in music for a long time through journalism, through PR, company president of a record company with Nirvana, Bonnie Raitt, the Allman Brothers. Danny Goldberg with us now on ESPN Radio. His book, Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, is available now. Thank you for making the time, Danny. Why did you feel the need to write this book after so many years?
I just felt over the last decade or so, somehow Kurt's death had overwhelmed his life in terms of the image that I thought was out there in the media. Part of it was some of the movies, and part of it was just the sensational and grotesque way that he died. But I feel the reason why I see people in their 20s wearing Nirvana t-shirts is not because of the way he died, but because of his music. And I wanted to just remember and write about the guy that I knew. I was one of his managers. I was one of Nirvana's managers. I was particularly close to him for the last 3.5 years of his life. And it's a memoir of working with him. It's romanticized. I love the guy. I feel he's a genius. But, you know, obviously he did have a dark side. But I feel that I wanted to write, do a portrait of him that was a little different from what's out there and emphasize more his creativity and his sweetness.
How difficult was it for you to revisit the darkness? Because those last 3.5 years were rough.
Well, it wasn't all rough. I mean, the last couple of months were really rough. It was a roller coaster ride. You know, again, there were so many moments in talking to around 40 people for the book, as well as my own files and my own memories, that were really wonderful, because he was a sweetheart and he had a sense of humor and he was so creative. Every aspect of what Nirvana accomplished came out of his creativity. He wrote the lyrics and the music, with the lead guitar player and the lead singer, storyboarded all the videos, designed the album covers, designed the t-shirts, and made every single decision for the band. So, you know, I went through kind of the writing equivalent of mood swings. There's no question that he was prone to depression, that he had issues with heroin, and that he killed himself. But that's not why we remember him. There's a lot of people with those problems that we don't remember. We remember him because of his art and what he did when he was alive that was great. So, you know, I went through my ups and downs, and writing itself is always a challenge. I write my own books. I don't use a ghostwriter or anything, so there are good days and bad days. But I'm glad I did it. It was cathartic, and as I say, I think it's a little different point of view about him than what's been out there before.
Was he a control freak as an artist? Because it sounds like
He was definitely a control freak. Yeah, he knew what he wanted, and he insisted on every detail of it being that way. At the time that Nirvana made their major label deal was a period in the business where you could negotiate complete creative control for artists that were in demand. So he had that. And, he was definitely a control freak when it came to his art.
Did you have difficulty reaching him as someone who loved him? And heroin is a poison, obviously. How much do you cover trying to reach him, even as you're celebrating life instead of the death?
Well, it depends what day it was and what hour of which day. In general, people who are on heroin are very difficult to reach, and he was no different. But he was not stoned all the time. When he wasn't stoned, he was a very warm guy. He was a good listener, and he was sensitive to other people. Not everyone who's brilliantly talented is a very nice person, but he was. Whatever darkness he had was aimed more at himself. So when he was high, when he was out of it, I mean, there was no reaching him for me any more than there was for anybody else in his life. But I found, in general, working with him pretty easy the rest of the time, because he was so smart, and he was I kind of understood what he wanted in terms of his career and so forth intuitively. So you know, there were good days and bad days. I prefer to remember the good days, but there were definitely some bad days.
Danny Goldberg with us. His book, Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, is available now. What can you tell us about how fame changed him, distorted him, brought unhappiness?
Well, he definitely became famous on purpose. You know, if you look at his journals or talk to people who knew him before I met him, I met him about 10 or 11 months before the big album, the first big album, Nevermind, came out. He was ambitious. And even after the success of Nevermind, when he had the enormous, almost overnight fame, for the next couple of years, he continued to do things in subsequent albums and the way he did concerts, the way he did interviews to continue to be successful. He was competitive. He was interested in rock and roll writ large. He came out of the punk rock culture that was very rebellious and anti-establishment, and he retained his political and cultural viewpoints, but he also admired the global impact that a band like the Beatles had made and aspired to have that kind of global audience. I didn't think fame changed him that much. He definitely didn't like being recognized if he went out to a store, and he really didn't like it when the media wrote about his private life, and that could drive him crazy. But he was a pretty private person after he became famous. He's not a guy that went to a lot of parties and wanted to be movie stars or wanted to wear designer clothes or buy expensive things. He was an artist at heart. He mostly spent most of his time either painting, drawing, or writing or playing music. So I think fame became part of his life, and there were aspects of it, as I said, that he didn't like, but I don't think it had that big an impact on his inner world. I think that his complicated inner feelings that both created this great art and these deep depressions were there long before he became famous and had a life all their own.
The negative media, did that come from the turbulence of the relationship with Courtney Love primarily?
Well, I think that there was one article in Vanity Fair, and I devote a whole chapter in the book to it because it had such an impact on him. It was about Courtney that also caused a lot of problems. First of all, he was in love with her, and he hated when people were mean or disrespectful to her. Secondly, it accused her of risking the health of her baby with drugs while she was pregnant, which was a terrible accusation. I don't believe it was true. She had the same obstetrician that delivered my kids, and I know he was a completely straight shooter who would never be involved with anything to risk a baby. But it caused tremendous turmoil, embarrassment, and even a legal struggle to make sure that they could have custody. So that was a huge drag, and the reverberations of that particular problem never completely went away. So in that respect, yeah, that, as a couple, they got a kind of scrutiny that was not always welcome, by him, and could drive him crazy if he felt it was unfair to her or to him. But, he was protective of her. He was in love with her.
What would you say is the most interesting chapter in your book?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I like all of them, but I worked the hardest on the introduction, trying to really sort out my feelings about him, about his brilliance, about his death, about why I felt I had something worth, a story worth telling. So in that respect, that's when I knew I had a book, is when I had an introduction.
What can you tell us about how tempestuous their relationship was?
I don't feel it was particularly tempestuous compared to, given the basic facts. I mean, they were two artists, and artists are inherently, very sensitive people. They were two people in the glare of the spotlight for their entire relationship. They both had drug problems, which brings out the worst in people. And they both came from a damaged, difficult to childhoods, which creates a lot of raw nerve endings. But, in general, they were like any other couple. Sometimes they got along, sometimes they didn't. My closeness to him came because I recognized that it was a real love affair, that it wasn't some passing rock and roll fling at a time when other people around the band didn't get that. And I continue to care a lot about Courtney, respect her as an artist. She spoke to me for the book. I managed Hole during that period of time to make their first major label deal, which was something Kurt wanted me to do. So, I feel they were two brilliant people who were very complicated. I don't know that there's anything new that I have to say about that, but I do have a lot of respect for both of them.
What damage in the childhood are you looking at when you think it's most responsible for shaping him?
Well, I'm not a psychiatrist or a mystic, but other books, my book's not a biography, it's only a memoir of the 3.5 years during which I knew him. So there are some good biographies of him, but there's no question that his parents' divorce and his sense of abandonment starting when he was 9 or 10 years old left scars that never completely healed. He talked about that a lot.
You've been in music for a long time. We're not making rock stars like this, are we, anymore? We are doing, you know, pop stars, maybe, hip-hop stars, maybe, but we're not really doing rock stars like this anymore, are we?
Well, I don't think, I think you're right. I think rock and roll had a hell of a run. I love music with guitars, and I like that those three chords that are at the core of rock and roll music, but you know, inevitably, new generations want a different musical language. You know, my parents' generation was about the big bands, about the great, you know, clarinet and trumpet players and sax players and jazz rhythms and feelings that were less meaningful to me. And I think, I have two kids in their 20s, and there's no question that hip-hop became the voice of young people. I think shortly after Kurt died, I think Nirvana was arguably the last big rock band that was also a pop phenomenon. So rock and roll still exists as an art form, and there's bands that can sell thousands of tickets, including some new bands, but it's not as big a pop global phenomenon as pop or hip-hop is in general. You're right about that. It's just it's now on that list of genres like blues, folk, or jazz. That's a niche musical genre that still means a lot to its fans, but isn't the center stage of pop. I think Nirvana was the last band that was both a big rock band and a big pop band.
Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, is available now. Danny Goldberg, the author, is with us. What can you tell us at the height of Nirvana? What did it look like?
It was pretty exciting because it changed the rock culture so quickly. You know, the early 90s was the peak of MTV's influence in the United States, so music videos were a big part of what connected people to these artists. And before Nirvana, there was this period where people called them hair bands, with a lot of lead singers who'd spent a lot of time at the gym wearing cut-off shirts, showing their muscles, with long hair that was literally blown by a fan off camera. And it was sort of a pop version of rock. It didn't have some of the philosophy and angst and depth that my generation, the 60s generation, had gotten used to with writers like Bob Dylan and Jimi Hendrix. And Kurt somehow figured out how to incorporate the intensity and depth of punk into this mass appeal rock language. So suddenly the whole idea of what a masculine frontman was changed to encompass a level of sensitivity and compassion, not just swaggering braggadocio. So it was an incredibly fast rise. The song Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know, within weeks of it being first on radio stations and the video being seen, became a global phenomenon. It was big in Latin America, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Japan. For someone who was, I was then in my early 40s, I'd been in the business a long time. I was so excited to be part of a cultural phenomenon. I think Kurt liked it too. He didn't like all of the byproducts of it, but he definitely planned it out. He knew what he was doing. He spent a lot of time thinking about what t-shirt he was going to wear when he was photographed, what he was going to say in interviews, what the next video was going to be. Whether or not he wanted to remix a song, he had this grasp of all the different aspects of what it was to be a rock artist and a rock star inside his head, and he executed in a way that opened the door for a whole new group of artists that wouldn't have been successful, I don't think, if Nevermind hadn't happened, and marginalized some people that had been big just 5 minutes earlier. So it was for me, it was a pretty exciting time. I felt bad when he was unhappy and when he went through his problems. But the explosion of Smells Like Teen Spirit and Nevermind was a great privilege to be part of.
When did you know you had something, then or long before then?
I knew they were really special the first time I saw the band live. When I first signed them, I didn't know at all. I just did it because Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth told me they were a good band and I trusted him. And I had a company with dozens of artists, and it was a pretty quick meeting. They trusted us for the same reason, because they opened some shows to Sonic Youth, and they were very credible in the indie alternative underground. But when I saw the band live, I knew Kurt had a magic about him that created this intimacy with fans, that it was going to be bigger than just a typical punk or alternative record. But until Smells Like Teen Spirit was on the radio and we got reaction to it, none of us, including the band, knew how big it was going to be. But within days, there were anecdotal reports of people calling up radio stations dozens of times asking to hear it again, of people putting their name on a waiting list at stores to get the album. of it being played over the PA system at a Guns N' Roses show in New York 4 or 5 days after it was first on the radio and the crowd cheering, things that just didn't happen within such a short length of time. So within a week or two, it was clear that we had a phenomenon on our hands once that song was out there in the public.
Did you sign them cheap? Do you remember the details of the signing? Did you
get management is a service business. You know, we get a percentage. You know, you get a percentage. Your typical deal is 15%. That's what we got. So, you know, we got paid when they got paid.
And when you look back at everything that happened there, and you've been in music for a long time, Danny, in terms of just natural talent, where would you put him among some of the people, some of the legends that you've worked with?
Well, among the people I worked with, I definitely put him at number one. He had so many talents, so many different things he was great at, and was so original the way he approached everything he did. Although I've worked with some amazing artists, including I was publicist for Led Zeppelin, for example, who are an amazingly important band. But I always say Kurt did everything in Nirvana that took two people, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, to do in Zeppelin. And Kurt also had this social conscience and a sense of cultural mission that, great as Zeppelin was, Zeppelin to me never had. I think in terms of history, he's on a short list along with John Lennon, Bob Marley, John Coltrane, David Bowie, Aretha Franklin, artists who really were kind of once-in-a-generation geniuses who somehow spoke to a whole millions of young people at a deep level, not just a song you could dance to or a chorus you could hum, but somehow seemed to articulate the feelings of aloneness, feelings of yearning for meaning in life at the same time as being entertaining. So I think he's on that short list. He's certainly not the only one on that plateau, but he's one of maybe a dozen people in the history of popular music who've had that level of impact.
Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain. It's available now. Before you get out of here, give us your best Zeppelin story. You got to have a good one, the one you break out at cocktail party.
Well, you know, in addition to Jimmy and Robert, Zeppelin also had what many people, including me, feel is the greatest drummer in the history of rock and roll, John Bonham. But Bonzo was also a bad drunk. And there was a party we had for them where he came up to me when he was inebriated and wanted to beat up a reporter from a British magazine. That guy hadn't even written anything bad about Bonham, but someone else at the magazine did. So I avoided the situation. And then at 2 in the morning, he's banging on my door. He used to call me Goldilocks, you know, because my name is Goldberg, and saying he wanted to do an interview with this kind of maniacal laugh that made me feel he didn't really want to do an interview. So I ignored him. And the next day, I nervously went to Peter Grant, who was the manager of the band, who I was generally terrified of. Peter is a 300-pounder, former professional wrestler, definitely knew a lot of tough people in the crime world. You know, he'd always told me, do whatever the band wants, do whatever the band wants. So I said, Peter, I know you tell me to do what the band wants, but I just thought it was a really bad idea to wake up this journalist at 2 in the morning. And Peter looked at me and he says, why don't you just get 2 rooms? Then he'll knock on the door of the wrong room. That's what I do. I'm the manager. You think he bothers you in the middle of the night? Imagine what it's like for me. So I always people. Thought that was an amazing comment. And that, with all recognition, that when I first met Nirvana, they wanted to hear about Led Zeppelin, particularly Dave Grohl, who idolized John Bonham. So, you know, it was a privilege working for them. And I was in my early 20s, and just to be around such a big band was amazing. But I didn't have the same level of intimacy that I did with Kurt, because by the time I was working with Nirvana, I was the manager. And Kurt had a level of depth that even the guys in Zeppelin didn't have. You know, he was a real once-in-a-lifetime genius.
His book, Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, is available now. Thank you, Danny, for spending the time with us.
Thank you so much for talking to me about the book.
Thank you, sir.
That interview with Danny Goldberg was brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So one of the more popular benchmarks, and really one of the only benchmarks we have here that you can count on with any sort of regularity, is your segment, Chris, with your dad, You Never Know.
You Never Know, yes.
Maybe one day it becomes its own podcast. But in this upcoming episode, this installment of You Never Know, with brilliant theme music produced by one Juju Gotti, who, if you haven't followed on Instagram, go ahead and do that. It's at Juju Gotti on IG. Let me double check that. Phil, while I check. Hang on.
It honestly is the best thing going on Instagram right now. It's the only thing that every day, like, I got to hit this Juju Gotti story before I go to bed.
It is at Juju Gotti on Instagram. And
is that when you do Instagram, like, before you go to bed?
Usually.
It's usually when they drop.
Nice little scroll.
It's one of my favorite things going right now. It's like my favorite TV show is Juju Gotti's Instagram story.
It's like for us on the show, it's like, did I make the scroll today? Did I make the story?
Did I make the story? What he does, a bunch of Easter eggs with the playlist from that show's day, which I always appreciate because he puts the original music video. We play a lot of kooky music on this show. To watch the music videos attached is really cool. It's a great way to recap a show, and sometimes it's just all out bonkers, and it's good nostalgia for people that are our age. But in this upcoming episode of You Never Know, you explore how weird your dad is.
He's the weirdest dude I've ever met, and he admits it, and we just tackle a bunch of different ways that he's weird.
Well, before we get into it, I want to tell you about Tissot, the official watch of the NBA and the proud sponsor of the Levitard and Friends Network. Each one of Tissot's timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. The Tissot Chrono XL is a great watch for those looking for a sporty chronograph with Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. While the Tissot PR100 family of watches brings together sporty and feminine detail for a collection that is bold, romantic, and ideal for the modern woman. Shop Tissot at us.tissotshop.com and at select watch and jewelry stores nationwide. Here it is, the theme music you all know and love. You Never Know.
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 You never know. You never know.
You never know.
You never know. You never know.
It's no surprise that you're a weird cat. Do you agree?
Yeah, I've been told that I'm one of the strangest people that people have ever met.
And you were saying earlier that you don't have a lot of quirks, but then in like a sentence later, you said that you always put your left shoe on first. Is that the weirdest thing you do? Because that's kind
of
weird.
You know, I don't think of myself. If you ask me, are you superstitious? I would say no, not at all. I'm not one of these guys who avoids stepping on the crack of a sidewalk, you know, to that degree.
I do.
But for some reason, and I don't know how or why this started or when, but I absolutely always put on my left sock and my left shoe before my right. And I can't explain it, but if somebody dared me and said, I'll give you $100 to put on your right sock and your right shoe first, if I did it, it would hang over me. I would feel weird. It would, like, affect my day. I think everybody has a certain routine, right? Even if we would not call ourselves superstitious, I think everybody has a little quirk that they all do all the time, the equivalent of me with the left shoe first.
Like when you're washing yourself in the shower.
Right.
You have the same routine every time?
Same routine. Every time.
Are you a loofah guy?
No.
So how do you clean? Like, you just pour body wash?
I just use soap.
Like a bar of soap?
Yeah, soap.
You rub your body with a bar of soap?
I lather up my hands. Like my hands are like full of soap and sudsy soap, and I clean myself.
But with your hands, you're just wiping your...
Yeah.
What about, I mean, this is very graphic, but what about your nether regions? You're getting in there with your hands and cleaning?
Uh-huh. Sure.
It's weird.
Yeah, why? My hands are then...
You need a loofah, man.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, my God. If I gave you a loofah...
Is that a sponge?
It's like a sponge with a little string on it.
What's so great about it?
Just, it does everything you're doing with your hands, but it does it with something that's actually, like, when you clean your car,
mm-hmm.
You don't do it with your... You don't put soap on your hands.
No, I use a face cloth or a rag or...
That rag.
An old t-shirt.
It's a rag for you.
Okay.
It's so much better. Not only do you feel cleaner, because I've been places before. I've been in a hotel room where I forgot a loofah, but it's night and day how much better a loofah is. I'm going to get you a loofah, and then you're going to get in the shower with the loofah, and then I'm going to be on the outside not looking with a recorder, just hearing your enjoyment and saying, ooh, wow, he was right.
I think you're overselling the loofah a little bit. I mean,
maybe we'll Instagram live it.
Nothing can clean me better than my hands. Is that weird? Like in our listening audience, I'm curious.
I would say 1% of people out there put soap on their hands and use their hands to clean their entire body.
Right. Well, first of all, and again, I may be on my own here, but I don't think anybody, when they shower, is cleaning 100% of their body. First of all, there's certain areas of your back you literally can't reach. And how dirty is your back really going to get? Right. You know, you're putting hot water on yourself, soap. I mean, everything is getting clean, but really, you know, the key areas to clean are your face, your hair, your armpits, you know, your private regions, and maybe your feet. You know, that's about it. You know, unless I've been gardening and I actually have visible dirt on my knee, I might take a shower without actually soaping up my knees. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another reason why I don't feel like I need the aid of a loofah.
So strange.
The wildly popular You Never Know series with Chris and Greg Cody. Tons more of that coming. The response to that segment has been great, and we promise you there'll be more of Greg and Chris. And it was brought to you by the fine, fine people at Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Shop at us.tissotshop.com. I've had a really wonderful time producing Mystery Crate, and the response has been generally positive. We use this podcast.
Except that Amin episode.
Except the Amin episode. We can all agree, guys? You can all agree? It's just an easy punching bag. But I like to use this podcast as a sort of proving ground for things that may either pop up again on the Mystery Crate or maybe make a sort of leap into maybe the main radio show, which still download that, still subscribe to that. I know we're throwing a lot at you guys. So it's really important that you download them. Even if you don't listen, merely downloading and remembering to refresh the download and still download, even if you've gone a couple of days without listening, go ahead and do that because it registers and it matters. I know we're throwing a lot out there, but I don't want any of our shows to suffer just because we're putting so much out.
I mean, but preferably listen if you're downloading. Like, that's kind of important.
I was going to say, Dan has compared this network to a menu at a restaurant where you can just choose what you want to order. I like to think of it more of a buffet. Mm. Overeat. Mm-hmm. Don't stop. Keep going back up to the buffet. Keep downloading. Keep listening. All the stuff.
But also, reach out to us on our individual social media platforms and let us know what you're liking on Mystery Crate. That way we can do more of it because the customer is always right. And while this is a self-righteous, self-indulgent affair, this podcast, we don't want to alienate you. We already know it's quite the investment of your time and patience as you don't know what you're getting, particularly with this podcast week to week. So let us know what you're digging. Let us know what you're not feeling. That way we can better curate it for our listening audience. And for that listening audience, I'm going to reward your patience by sticking through this entire podcast with yet another ad. Oh, and it's ZipRecruiter. You've already heard it once, but I'm bringing it back. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Now ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work for you. The app finds jobs you'll like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone who is just like you. And if an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know. So if you're interested in the job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is rated number one. Right now, Mystery Crate listeners, we implore you to go out and download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Do not wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. Next week, I think I'm going to bring back one of the core voices of our show. All right? I know I don't like teasing much on Mystery Crate, but we gave you a little dash of Dan.
Who is it?
It's Sugats. We're going to have Sugats on next week. That's all I'm going to tell you because we're going to try out something new.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, you forgot about that. We did record these in different days.
By the way, if you guys are listening, there was another murder in that same window today, just like there was yesterday. I'm telling you, something is going on in that window.